We thank you for coming today to the second half of the overview of the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translations and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All right, so this part two will be taking us now into a quick review, perhaps 10-minute review of the preparatory part yesterday. For those of you who were here, a refresher course. For those of you at your first time, so that you're on board with the information you'll need for this section. These are facilitations. That means we're here to help the participants maximize the number, the amount of information that they're receiving, and to give them methods by which they can retain it longer, assimilate it faster, and retain it longer. So some of the things you'll see are more interactive, multi-sensory. It's a little bit different. This is called an interaction facilitation. All right, and that's why you have different materials. You have handouts that are study guides and program guides also, because we follow that format. And these are meant for you to use as resource materials for you in the future. You're more than welcome to keep them. You can use them when you study. And the format used here is also helpful for any chapter of the Gita. This one in particular is chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute. But the format we use is pretty much the same. You'll see the parts. We'll go over that again in a little bit. So we hope you are, and we all pray that we are all here to glorify the Bhagavad Gita and try to please Srila Prabhupada and Lord Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Actually, that is such a simple thing, really. That's all we really should be trying for. It's all that Krishna is looking for, our sincere, humble attempt to please Him. So let us pray that today we all, together as a collective, beg for their mercy, that whatever we do as an offering, will be pleasing to them. All right? So let's take a quick look again. You have your program guides. We also do that. Some of you perhaps have not been here before, but you have on the program guide, you have the almost one of the most important topics, the four kinds of miscreants and the four kinds of pious men. This is a very big, important section in this chapter, and we will be going again over the sequence, the stages of learning that we keep as a format all the time. The slokas are all here highlighted in your little booklet. The important context words are bold-faced so that it's easy for you to follow. After that, and you'll see the slokas are divided by the structure. This particular seventh chapter has six subdivisions. Krishna discusses six main topics. So that helps you break it down, so you'll know how the slokas fit those sections. The next section gives you the 12 memory verses, important thematic verses in this chapter. Out of the 30 slokas, the devotees who do the research and setting up study guides, they have noted that 12 out of 30 are considered important for preachers to know. One is considered an essential memory verse. That's Bhagavad Gita 7.14. All right, so you have those given, Sanskrit and English. On the back of that section, you'll see a little computer keyboard which shows you the numbers. It's like a little code chart guideline for that. The next section is definitions, which a little more than a glossary includes any slokas that are coming up in the purports. So here, all this information from this section on in the brochure is mostly from purports. It's coming from purports. So you will see here references that Prabhupada makes to other Vedic literatures. That is given. And any terms that he uses, often Sanskrit terms, but sometimes not only Sanskrit, some kind of an English term that he will define in terms of the Vaishnava Siddhanta. So that is there again, subdivided by the topics, the topic breakdown. You'll see the pages, or the sloka number reference. P means purport. That's what that means, purport. Okay? That's quite lengthy, actually. Don't let it scare you. It's like a book, you know, the index will be there, but that doesn't frighten you if you want to buy the book. But it's handy. You may want to look something up in the index. The next section is analogies and examples, and that's where we're focusing today. We have many slides now. We'll be going over the sloka slides together, but we will also be weaving in, second time, we will be weaving in slides that are especially designed to highlight a philosophical point in a purport or an analogy, or just some beautiful imagery, something that made it, what shall I say, a picture possible. A writer, actually, his skill is to create an image with words. So we've extended that by actually trying to find an image that enhances those words. So that way that should help you when you're reading purports, right? It really makes a big difference. And you'll see that they've done studies that people remember pictures almost 100%. If you see a picture of something, the retention is almost 100%. So even though our process is philosophically based on hearing, in terms of just the scientific nature of Kali Yuga, retention is 20%. So if you're just listening, after a lecture, if you walk out, you'll forget 80% immediately, practically within 8 hours. That's proven. So the picture helps us, and I think you'll all agree, if you see a picture and the information and you hear it, and then also you see, yesterday we added signals. People were able to retain, and they were following along, right? Everybody did. You were following along quite quickly. So this is called multisensory instruction. You involve all of your senses, and the impact is much greater. And I always compare that to going into the temple at Guru Puja time. You know, you see the deities, and you hear kirtan, and somebody's bringing you flowers. And, you know, it's all of your senses are being completely saturated with Krishna consciousness. So this works in terms of studying. If you use multisensory approaches, the information actually saturates your intelligence. I find it's common sense. Everybody agree? You all agree? Okay, good. All right, then the last section, this is also quite lengthy, in which we look for analogies, we're going through that, is taking the sloka and converting the sloka into a question. And there are six words that are considered thinking words. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. All of them start with WH except the word how. You just drop the W. But those are, again, a writer's skill. A writer who's expert will answer those six questions when he's saying something. And a reader, if he's sharp, if he knows, he will ask those six questions when he's reading. Who am I talking about? What is the topic? Where is it happening? Why is it happening? How is it happening? When did it happen? Makes sense, right? So those six questions, you'll see them. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. They're called thinking words. They apply to questions, and they apply to answers. So if you can take a sloka and convert it into a question, then paraphrase it into an answer, you've pretty much exhausted those thinking aspects of the statement. Actually, a good writer knows how to put almost all six into very short, concise statements. Expert. Okay? So be sharp. You can look for it now. And that will help you as you think along, as you read. Scriptural references are in the back. And then we have denoted these circles to be pearls, because I think from this point on, we will use that analogy, that the pearls of in Krishna in the seventh sloka of the seventh chapter, he said, everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So I thought, oh, this would be good. We're using these pearls now to use the context, the link words, for remembering the key word of each sloka. And that way we can do a quick walkthrough. We did that yesterday, and I found people were attentive, and they were following, and it seemed as though they were retaining. It seemed to really work. All right? So that's a brief overview from yesterday of your little brochure. And also we have two charts here, older ones, by Tyag Chaitanya from the VIG, showing the five elements and the objects, right? The earth, water, fire, air, ether. And the knowledge acquiring senses. All right? And on the back, there's quite a bit of information here on the demigod worshippers. this isn't such a big thing in the West. People don't even know about demigods in the West. It's so below that, almost animal level. But in India, demigod worship is quite prominent. And that can become an obstacle if there's a deep attachment and they don't elevate to a higher understanding of who is really awarding the benefits, who's the benefactor and the beneficiary of sacrifice. So there's quite a bit here about the nature, the philosophy, the action, the result, and the destination of the demigod worshiper. Okay, so that's your little packet. We've gone over that again. We're going to do one more little quick review. We're going to go into the slides on the instructional objectives section. And we'll run through, not the first packet, but that again. Let's go to this. The thing to learn is a skill. I always try to stress skills. Whatever information you have, make the most of it. It may be very little, but if you know how to get the maximum out of it, that's a skill. So here you have, okay, there's the title slide, let's move on. But on the title slide, you see, well, look, I see Bhagavad Gita as it is, and when I'm designing these slides, I try to embed, the word is embedded knowledge, I try to embed as much information as possible, but still not lose the aesthetic integrity of the piece. So here you have the title, and you have what chapter number?
Seven.
And what's our title? Knowledge of the Absolute. What else have I embedded? 30 verses. So now I've oriented myself. I'm in the seventh chapter of the book. The title is what? Knowledge of the Absolute. And again, yesterday I found people were honest, they raised their hands, but a number of the devotees were unaware of the title. So that is an objective here. By the end of this prescribed period, you should know these things. It's not just you sit and you listen and you walk away with 20%. You should walk away with 70, 80, 90%. You understand the point? That's why we're going through this process. This is quite different. It's a totally different paradigm. Now, we've given you 714. Does anybody know what 714 is all about?
Yes.
It's 714 is the key memory verse. Daivihi esha gunamayi. So here on one slide, if you just spent a few moments on it, you can extract a lot of essential information. So now let's see what you know that you didn't may perhaps know before. What chapter is it?
Seven.
Title? Knowledge of the Absolute. Size? 30 slokas. And what is the key verse? 714, right in the middle. That is a literary device. Artists use it. It's called rising action in a drama. In the Gita, as I said yesterday, it's in the middle of the Mahabharata, and in the middle of the Gita is confidential knowledge. In the middle of confidential knowledge is one of the key verses. And you'll see in the middle of this chapter, 14, 15, and 16, right in the center, key verses, key points. Okay? So everybody on board. So the philosophical understanding as learners here is that maximize what I have. Get the most out of the least. That's a philosophical truth. Get the most out of the least. The West has a tendency to have a lot and you get very little. But the Eastern conception is different. Less is more. But I learned how to use it effectively. Very, very different paradigm. Or at least it used to be like that. Unfortunately, they're following old Western methods. Okay, so our next one we go. And again, we're putting together the objectives, we're putting together all the pieces. How many pieces in this chapter?
30.
And if you miss some of them, right, I want to know where they go. Where do they go? If I were to dump this box on the floor, I'd have to pick it all up and put it somewhere. So we're giving you now mental categories into which you can put this information. That's very important, because if you can be organized, you can access quickly, you can remember effectively. And Prabhupada said, study the Gita like a lawyer, as a lawyer does. So that means organization. And also you'll know structure. If you're not an architect, you'll walk into this room and you'll just see walls and furniture and people. But an architect, even if he's not Sarabi, he will see the structure right away. He said, where's the supporting beam? So when you see, when you study, like a lawyer, the first thing you do is you classify and categorize. I study, I know where the things go. I will remember, and I will access quickly. A lawyer walks into court, he cannot thumb through his book to find the answer. He has to know the laws like that. Okay? So Prabhupada said the preacher should be able to do that quickly. Okay. All right, so we also use three perspectives. This is complete. We give you the general picture, overview from the sky, the big picture, airplane view. Then we come on the ground and we give you topics, and you will learn them. Yesterday they were learning them. And then the final thing is today we head into the purports, the underview. That term was coined by Gopi Puranadana. Without the purports, we really don't understand the slokas, according to the Siddhanta, Buddhiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, especially Prabhupada. Because it's by his mercy that any of us understand Gita. Actually, it's by his mercy that anybody at all understands Gita. I don't know how many, 600 versions, and no one became a devotee. But this, look at how many people have come to Krishna consciousness because of Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's connected like an internet system in the parampara. And it hasn't been distorted for personal gain. Okay, so the next objective is we're starting with the big picture. We did that yesterday. We'll go over that quickly. And the next step, strong foundation. Everything in life stands on a strong foundation. Whatever you have to learn. The more you invest on a strong foundation, the higher you can go in accumulating the information and the deeper you can go in realization. Higher in information and deeper in realization. Okay, next. And the stepping stones, the little pearl system, we used signals yesterday. We walked you through the slokas. You found that helped a lot because now I need to know not only the structure, but how do I connect the parts? You have rooms in this building, but there are passageways connecting you. So that shows us how we flow, the sequential flow. That's a very important next step. The storyline in this chapter. Okay? Then after that, these were preliminary from the first, these were slides we did for chapter 4. I've used them again. The Gita is a step in the evolution of consciousness. So the first stage of consciousness is I have to realize I'm suffering. Second stage, chapter 2, I get help from a bona fide guide. The bona fide guide outlines what help he's going to give me. And then in the third step, chapter 3, Karma Yoga, he tells me my work has to be done. Karma means sacrifice. Karma means activity. It means sacrifice. It doesn't mean personal gain. That's binding. Then if I'm sacrificing, well, what do I get for sacrifice? I get knowledge, transcendental knowledge. And what's the benefit of that? Transcendental knowledge burns karma, burns it right and left, burns all the seeds of desire, burns past, present, and future karma. So powerful is transcendental knowledge. But how do I get that? Through the parampara from a bona fide guru. It's not just anybody or anything. And not all sacrifices are bona fide. They are prescribed by scripture. A lot of people are sacrificing day and night, but they're not going to get transcendental knowledge. So then the next slide shows us, after we finish chapter 6, again, the levels of realization up to where we are now, that's chapter 7. Doubts, chapter 1. He doesn't know. He's tried to answer his dilemma, but he can't. He goes to the guru in chapter 2, who outlines the whole book for him. In chapter 3, Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means I sacrifice karma for Vishnu. Otherwise, I stay here. I'm bound. The result of sacrifice is I get transcendental knowledge. If I have transcendental knowledge, I'm acting now on a higher platform. That will bring me to liberation in chapter 5, in which I'm not even doing it. I realize, wait a minute, nature's carrying everything out. Krishna's sanctioned it. I'm not the doer at all. It's a subtle form of renunciation there, very advanced. Chapter 5 is an extremely advanced stage of realization. And if I do that, well, what's the benefit at the end of that chapter? Then I'm meditating on the supersoul. I'm aware that the supersoul is actually sanctioning everything that's going on in the material creation. And by focusing on supersoul, I arrive to the idea that supersoul becomes, that's Krishna. That's Krishna. And that leaves me, that meditation on Krishna prepares me now for that ascent beyond transcendence. Because all of this is yoga process is to take me to the platform of transcendence for self-realization. But it will not give me Krishna. Only bhakti will give me Krishna. And that has to come by the mercy of a pure devotee. So this chapter is very important. It is the beginning of the middle section, bhakti yoga. So does everybody follow now the progression that has preceded us? We are now at the beginning of bhakti yoga, this whole middle section. And again, Prabhupada said that we showed you the sandwich, the bread. You want to show them that slide? Yeah, this was the yoga ladder. We talked about that yesterday too. That you want to go back to the yoga ladder quickly. Below the dotted line, it's animal life at the bottom. No regulation, nothing. Animal life. You can be a two-legged animal. Most people are. Above that, though, is karmakanda. At least I follow the Vedas. 93% of the Vedas is karmakanda activity. The dotted lines represent the modes. Yoga, but still under the influence of the modes. Karma, gyan, and astanga. There is still influence of the modes. You're going higher, but you're still not above them. Only then with gyan, if perfected, can I go to Brahman realization, that's liberation beyond the modes, or if I go to Astanga, I can go either way to Paramatma or Brahman realization. But at Paramatma realization, I have to encounter a bhakta. So that's explained that unless one encounters a bhakta, he can't go to Krishna. So you see how fortunate we are. We have come in touch with, you know, Prabhupada and his followers. They're the only hope for humanity to ascend to the platform of perfection spiritually. Only hope. Without the preachers, mankind has no hope. That's very clear here. You see it? Very clear. And Bhagavan realization, that's possible only through bhakti yoga, the highest level of God realization. Okay? So next slide. And we did this yesterday, our breakdown. So on your papers, you may want to fill this in if you haven't. In your paper, you can fill in the chapter title on that the little section. You're allowed to do that. You go right ahead. You can mark in here your codes. You can put knowledge of the absolute, bhakti yoga, size 30. Now here you can fill in topic title, topic size. And we use a little trick to help you remember. Yesterday, we said what number did you see the most? Do you remember what we said?
Five.
And how many times did you see it?
Three
times. So the idea is to ask the student questions that get him to explore, not just try to remember, drill it in. No, that's very boring. And it's actually not exciting for the mind. It doesn't engage the mind positively. So you ask questions that get people to explore. Okay, I saw five three times, and then I asked the question, if I count backwards from seven, what do I get?
Seven,
six, and five.
Two.
Okay, if I subtract five from seven, what do I get?
Two.
So we have now identified six numbers. And another way to remember them would be cluster them. It's called chunking. 75, 25, and 65. And if you like to entertain your mind, you say, well, if I go to the Maha stand, this will be 75 rupees, this will be 25 rupees, this will be 65 rupees. Think of some way to anchor. It's called anchoring. If I can't remember something abstract, you connect it to something else. That's how the mind remembers. It anchors. There's nothing in this world that you can remember without anchoring it to something you already know. Not possible. All right, now we looked at the topics. You can write those numbers in your brochure if you want to. And I saw up here, we tried to make it easy for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, under the letters, right? So H stands for hearing. You remember that. H stands for hearing. And when we hear about Krishna, we will understand he is number one. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no truth higher. That is established in this chapter and in this section. And you understand that by hearing, which is a pious activity in and of itself. Part 2, the number is 2. And the emphasis there is that there are two main energies, and Krishna is the source of both. He is the source of the superior and the inferior energies, and we'll see how they manifest in the elements and how they manifest in his opulences, those two things. They manifest in the elements and they manifest in his opulences. Okay? Chapter 10 is about his opulences, but this chapter is about knowledge about the absolute nature. It's more the impersonal understanding of Krishna, the essence in all the material elements. Chapter 10, you'll get in the opulences the best of something. Of birds, he is Garuda. Of mountains, he is Meru. Of purifiers, he is the wind. So there's a difference between these two chapters. In the fourth section, you see -4 and a +4, right? So those are the four kinds of people, the miscreants and the pious. Four kinds of people who, Prabhupada said, you can walk through the world and you can identify who's a miscreant and who's pious. Four kinds of people surrender to Krishna and four kinds of people do not. So that section is large, and Prabhupada devoted many, many, many pages and paragraphs to this. I think for the classes, they gave one class for each one, and even a whole class on the general heading, Duskritina, and we'll talk about that. And the last two, D with the star, is the flowers, demigod worshippers, and impersonalists. They worship, they surrender, but to the wrong thing. They are less intelligent. Their intelligence is polluted. The final one, you'll see a smile and a frown button. That represents isha-dvesha, desire and hatred. Okay, attraction, repulsion. This is the business of the mind, and it is what manufactures future bodies. I like it, I don't like it. I want it, I don't want it. The more the mind is engaged in isha-dvesha, repeated birth and death are awaiting us. And what's the freedom? Freedom from that? Freedom is knowledge of the absolute. Only on the absolute platform can one be freed from ichadvesha. Ichadvesha is what drives the mind mad. The mind is not peaceful. Only by focusing the mind on the absolute can you transcend duality. Okay, so everybody got the breakdowns, and you can fill them in on your little charts if you like. Okay, next. That we can go, yeah, those of you with the keyboard, we show the color coding again, the slokas, the first section, up to 7, 1, 4, 5, 6, and 7, that first 7, almost all of those are important verses. And then you have 14, 15, and 16, those are, again, close to each other, that's in the middle. And 19 is an important one, Samahatmasu Durlabha, very rare. 20, 23, and 24, this is in the section on demigod worshippers and impersonalists. Prabhupada stresses that one, that section so much. This is a bigger problem in India. There's a much attachment to the worship of the demigod and the impersonal conception that Brahman is superior to the personal form, or the personal form is assumed. There are many, many, many varieties of misconception there. But it's quite... It's quite rampant. And it's a challenge for preachers, too.
Can you go closer to the mic? Closer
to the mic? Parvati Mataji phoned me this afternoon. You were there, and she said I was too close to the mic. I thought, well, it's a good 12 inches. I have no idea of how the system works, the sound system works. Our operator is not here, either. And I don't know what's happening on the radio. My concern is mostly, I'll tell you, as a facilitator. When a facilitator is front of a group, his only business is that group. That's his prime.
Because of the speaker is exactly to where the microphone is, that's why there's a feedback, and it's not good for the hearing. That's the problem. Where is the speaker here? Maybe you have to move a little bit.
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe Janardhan Maharaj knows what the answer to the problem is. But you people are here, and any of you who are school teachers, right? Your business, if your group of people, is to facilitate the people there as much as possible. Okay. Okay, so we're here trying to do that. Hopefully we can facilitate people who are distant as well. We'll do our best. Okay? But actually, it's a spiritual obligation. That one sounds even scarier. It's a spiritual obligation. If a person's in the role of teacher or facilitator, whoever comes, it's understood that God has sent that person. And you're accountable. So I'm accountable to all of you today. Okay. I hope this is all right. Otherwise, I'll get a phone call. And all right. So you can see now a little about the breakdown. These are important verses, 12 out of 30. Okay. Next slide. Next slide. And this is important today because we're going to be analyzing slides that are purport slides. This is the secret. Prabhupada even describes the Gita this way. Top sentence, final opinion. Any unit of thinking is designed in this structure. Prabhupada said karma yoga is the top crust of the bread sandwich. Jnana yoga is the bottom. And in between is bhakti. And here you have three ways you develop the inner part of the sandwich. And you'll study this if you study Ishupanishads. Sabda Brahman, the knowledge coming from above, beyond our sense perception. That's very important. That stands above all the other forms of evidence. The other form of evidence is sense perception. If I can tell, oh, this is burning, I don't touch it. That's truth, right? That's called pratyaksha. That Prabhupada uses analogies for that a lot. The third is anuman, logic. Now, logic is an ascending process, but it makes sense. Like if it's raining, I put up the umbrella, right? That's logical. So logic is a form of evidence, and those two, pratyaksha and anuman, are acceptable if they do not conflict with sabda. Everybody follow that? So what's your first one? Sabda. Above the ceiling, Prabhupada gives example, we do not know what's happening above the ceiling. So we have to trust that the information coming down from above, we have to accept. Pratyaksha, my senses can prove certain things. And anuman, by logic, I can also detect. I see a living body, I see a dead body. If I'm thinking, what's the difference? Something's missing in one of them. So those are the three things. When you're reading a purport, you'll see there will be some kind of reference. And there'll usually be an analogy or something imagery, graphic. And there may be some logical explanation to follow. Prabhupada follows formulas. He's a writer. He knows what he's doing. Krishna's writing it through him. But Prabhupada was a brilliant writer. We'll see when we go through that middle section. It's poetry at its height. Okay? Now here's the idea of the sandwich again. Top crust is the topic sentence. So you take a purport. The system is, read the first sentence, then I immediately read the last sentence. Because that will take me to what the writer's conclusion is. Then I go back and I itemize the points that he has made that lead me to the same conclusion. He has to take me from A to C. And in the middle is B, he develops it. He can't just dogmatically say, believe it or don't believe it. No. He has to give you evidence. Okay? So that's it. You see again, scriptural reference, sense perception, logic, and induction. So become a sharp reader when you're reading the purports. Okay, next. And we'll skip that one again. This is like seven. Okay, on your paper, if you would like to receive these things, access to all these slides, just send me an email. One gentleman already gave me his email. You write it down, because if I read your handwriting, I may get it wrong. But if you send me the email, Kamala will put it on a Google forum. And every day you will get slides. Many of the slides we use for purports, they go out every day with the purport. And when the whole package is done, then you get a link to the Google Drive, and then you can get all the slides, not only these, but up to Chapter 3. Okay? No cost. All you have to do is send me your email. It doesn't affect me whether it's a million people out there or whatever. But, and you can share it with other people quite a few devotees who do that. Okay? So it's pretty easy. Gmail, my name with an H and 1@gmail.com. Okay? So don't hesitate. There's nothing to lose. Okay? Nothing to lose. Okay, next. Now we're going to take a look. We're at the beginning of this chapter. Let's take a look at what's ahead, because we're on the top layer of six chapters. So, and we have noticed the size at the end and the number. Absolute occurs twice. In number 7, knowledge of the absolute. This word knowledge occurs. Knowledge, 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 knowledge. How do we get knowledge? By hearing about Krishna. And that knowledge would be in full, without a doubt. Next chapter, very important. How do I remember Krishna at the time of death? We all have to take the test. And this is part of our preparation for the test. Every one of us here will have to face that test. So we're here to help each other. It's a serious thing. We don't know where we're going to go when the test will come. We won't know. And next, the most confidential knowledge. We'll just go back to that, confidential knowledge. In the middle, right? This very beautiful chapter. 10, the opulences of the absolute. Arjuna wants to know, how can I remember you? So Krishna starts giving him all kinds of ways. Then the universal form. This is to prove whether he's God or not. If someone says he's God, Mayavadi walks up to you and says, I'm God. And you say, okay, show me your universal form. If he can't do that, then sorry, sir, you don't meet the criterion. And the last is devotional service, number 12. Only 20 slokas. But it too establishes so clearly the personal over the impersonal as being the superior form of worship and ways to become dear to Krishna. Okay, so that's sort of an outline of what's ahead in this middle section. And we have another slide in here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, let's do this one. This is what we call at the beginning of an instructional period, knowing the vocabulary. We need to know these terms. We have 16 words here. And these are key words. Now, in the middle, I have what are pairs, opposites, gyanam and vigyanam. Okay, so can you all say those? Gyanam? And vigyanam, right? Gyanam means acquired knowledge, and vigyanam means realized. Realized. You practice it. Apara and param. Okay, can you say those? Apara and param. Apara is the inferior energy, and param is the superior, the two energies. Okay, inferior, superior, and icha, dvesha. Can you all say that one? Icha, dvesha. These are terms that you should become conversant with because they are critical terms. Icha, dvesha is why we're here, desire and hate. Desire and hate. And we are under, we are para energy, but we're under the influence of inferior. And why? Because we want to exploit it. That's what brought us here. We're here looking for victims. At the cost of environment, people, anything, anyone. It's pretty sad. Not a nice picture. Gyana means knowledge, but vijnana means realized knowledge. Okay. Now on the left, we also have at the top two major terms, duskritina and sukritina. Now kriti means meritorious, a person who has performed meritorious work. He's called kriti. Now, how he uses the result of that meritorious work will define whether he is a duskritina or a sukritina. Duskritina, du, like Duryodhana, means misused. He has opulence, but it's not being properly used. It takes merit. You know, you can take someone who has, you know, he's a multimillionaire in this world. He has merit. But he's not a bhakta. Sukritina is one who has come to devotional service and he's begun to render devotional service. So he has merit to do that. It's properly being engaged because he will now extricate himself from material bondage. And we'll be going over the four kinds of duskritinas, the mudha, the naradama, the mayapakrita jnana, and the asura. Those four ones. And the sukritinas, these are four kinds of worshippers, devotees, but they're not in the perfected stage. Artha is the one who comes out of distress. Arti is the one looking for material gain, either wealth or position. Jignasu is the one who's inquisitive, he's curious. And the last one is the jnani, he's the topmost. He's in search of knowledge of the absolute truth. So of the four, the last one is considered the best. And if he engages in devotional service fully, he's extremely dear to Krishna. He's the very best, okay? So you got those terms now? All right? That's our key words. You should try to be conversant with those because that's the essence. These are the essence words in this chapter. All right. Now I think we're ready to go through some slides. So we'll begin. Now we're going to go to, given our time, I think we better go through we'll go through really fast, the just plain ones first. I think we can do pretty quickly. We're going to use signals also. Signals help. All right. From the first seven, our first section was seven. Our first signal was what?
Yeah.
Hearing. Okay. And the second was what?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. And the third one was?
Thousands.
Thousands of men. And the next one was?
Years.
Eight. Five and three. Five gross and subtle elements. Next was there was what?
Superior
energy. Remember the word param. Superior energy. But who is the what?
Source.
Krishna is the source of both. And finally, how does he sustain everything? As what?
Pearls.
He's the thread. If you have a necklace of any kind, you don't see the thread. But if you cut the string, what happens? They fall off. So he's invisible. He's all those energies, he's sustaining all of them. He's not visible, though. The thread is not visible. So that's the way Krishna defines himself. I'm supporting all of you, but you can't see me. You can't see me. Okay? So let's do our verses together. We'll just run through these quickly. Interact. When I stop you all loudly, for the benefit of the listeners, you say the next word. My point is to stop at a point where there's a break, like a phrase. Okay, here we go. This one is so important, this sloka, because if just by hearing about Krishna, you will know him in full without a doubt. All of you here are sitting here because you do not doubt. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's blue, he plays a flute, he takes care of cows. No matter what people tell you, you're crazy, you will not believe them. You know you're right, without a doubt. Okay? You all sitting here? You look intelligent? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now,
yeah.
O son of Prita, how by practicing
yoga
in full consciousness of
me,
remember full consciousness of me, with mind attached to
me,
you can know
me
in
full,
free from
doubt.
A lot packed in there. More slokas, no, more lectures on this and references than any other sloka. Big time. Okay, next. I shall now, phenomenal is your key word, remember? Phenomenal. I shall now declare unto you in
full
this
knowledge.
Watch that word, it's popping up. Both
phenomenal
and
luminous.
This being
known.
No. Nothing further shall remain for you to knowledge. No. The whole chapter, knowledge. Next. Thousands. Out of many thousands among
men,
one may endeavor for
perfection.
And of those who have achieved
perfection,
hardly one knows me in
truth.
Now he uses the word truth. Watch again. It's very poetic because these words come up and they connect the pearls. Next. Eight. Now we have the eight subtle and gross material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind,
intelligence,
and false ego. Altogether, these
eight
constitute my separated material
energy.
energies, all eight of them there. Okay, next. Superior is the key word. Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind, which comprises the living who are exploiting, heavy word, the resources of this material inferior nature. They're of the superior nature, they're under the influence of the inferior nature, but they're here to exploit it. And that's why they're being kept here. Next. Source. What's above it? All created beings have their
source
in these two of all that is and all that is in this world. Know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. There's no doubt about it. He's the creator and he's the destroyer of everything here. I thought this was a beautiful picture because it shows something on a necklace, but it shows what happens if the pearls fall off. O conqueror of wealth, there is no
truth.
There it goes again. Truth. Superior to
me.
He's number one. Remember, everything rests upon
me
as are strung on a thread. The thread is not visible. Everything we're doing now, Krishna's sustaining us. Okay? Okay, next section, number two. Remember how many slokas we have there?
Five.
Everybody good. You've got it. Okay? Now we're going to see how these energies manifest. Because as we see how they manifest, Krishna is now revealing, especially for the person who has the impersonal conception of the Absolute. This helps him remember God. All right, the words were taste, right? And what's the next one?
Fragrance.
Then what's the next one?
Seed.
Seed, right? And then?
Strength.
And then the last one was?
Independent.
Independent. He's the creator of all of this, but he is independent of it. That's the amazing thing about Krishna. Everything's emanating from him, but he's above it, independent of it. Nothing affects him. All right? There we go. Taste. O son of Kunti. This is a famous one. I am the what?
Taste
of water. So if you drink water, that taste should make you think of Krishna. The light of the sun and the moon. Now notice that's light. The syllable?
Om.
That sound. In the Vedic mantras, I am the sound also in ether and the ability in man. So if somebody's doing something wonderful, he's talented, musician, singer, dancer, anything, who's doing it? Krishna has the ability. So we should not be puffed up on borrowed plumes, right? Our gifts are borrowed. They're borrowed plumes. And they can be taken away. They can be taken away. Next, he is what? Fragrance, we're going to talk about the earth. I'm the original
fragrance.
See, that's the quality of the earth. And I am the heat in fire. I am the life of all that lives. And I am the penance of all the aesthetics. Yeah, of all the aesthetics. You might consider that to be the opulence of renunciation also. Okay, next, seed. Okay? O son of Prita, know that I am the original
seed
of all existence, everything. The intelligence of the intelligent and the prowess of all powerful men. So anything you see in this world is wonderful. Krishna is the essence of that. Next. I am the
strength
of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. O Lord of the Bharatas Arjuna. Next. Know that all states of being, our key word is again independent, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my
energy.
I am in one sense
everything,
but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material, for they, on the contrary, are within
me.
That's the amazing thing. You showed us looking at Krishna, but inside the mouth, she sees herself and the whole creation. And she becomes philosophically confused. But then he covers her over again because it will affect her bhav. That happened to Arjuna when he saw the universal form also. He lost his sense of friendship with Krishna. Now we have only two in this section. Deluded. The person who's deluded. Anybody under the modes is deluded, whether he realizes it or not. And the next 14 is divine energy, its connection with Krishna. All right, so let's say those slokas together. The deluded person. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and the whole world does not know who am above the modes and inexhaustible. He's not only above them. Krishna has, there's no end. You can't deplete it. Anything in the material world can be exhausted. We all know that at the end of a day, right? Next, but the divine, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is?
Difficult.
It's difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Okay, very important. We're halfway through now. Now we're going to go to the fourth section, the pious and the impious. Miscreants, the pious, the best, the magnanimous, and the one who's rare. Okay, next. Miscreants, those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are the lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. So those are the kinds of people running all around on the planet. Anybody who's not practicing devotional service, he's one of these four. Very simple. There's the description in the Gita. Next. Now let's take a look at the pious. There are four kinds of those. All of us came for one reason, perhaps mixed, but mostly predominantly one. Well, best among the bardas, fourth kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto. Number one is the distress, the desire of the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute. That's the topmost, the jnani. Next. There's somebody who's best, though. Of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him, and he is dear to me. So Krishna reciprocates. He's special. Next. Magnanimous. Now, anybody who's here has to be that. Even if he's not on the purest platform, he has to be magnanimous. All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my very own self. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. So that's the result. You see, Dhruva, he's off to Dhruvaloka. So let's hope all of you, when that big test comes, the airplane will come and take you, right? We'll come down and fly down. Rare. Now here we have Prabhupada giving diksha, beads to Samadhiji and Krishna Balaram. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in
knowledge,
there it is again, surrenders unto knowing me to be the cause of all and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So you're all rare. We don't realize that we're close together and we see our shortcomings and, oh, why do I live next to that person? But when you compare a devotee with a non-devotee, you're grateful. Doesn't take too long. Doesn't take too long. Okay, next. Next category. That was your fourth category, four pious, four impious type. This is about the demigod worshippers and the impersonalists. Their worship is misplaced. So we have demigods, and then we have deity, and then we had benefits, then we had the planets, they go, that's their destination. Then two slokas have to do with the impersonalist. The impersonalist, right, what classifies him, and finally anybody who's just foolish. Krishna covers himself from their understanding. Demigods, there we have a Shiva Lingam. Those who intelligence has been stolen by material surrender unto and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their nature. So that's explained in chapter 17 that according to the nature, the modes, one will have a particular faith. Faith is accordance to the nature that the heart is affected by the modes. So even among demigod worshippers, there's some in, you know, ignorance, some a little bit higher, and like that. You'll get different modes like that. Next.
They follow a particular deity. Now this is Krishna telling you how he is in effect the worshipper and the worshipped. I am in everyone's heart as the supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. So if someone is being faithfully worshiping a deity, Krishna is helping that because the person might advance. He may come to a higher level of realization. Benefits, but who's behind the whole thing? Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtain his desires. But actually these benefits are bestowed by me alone. It's all coming from Krishna. But that person hasn't advanced enough in understanding to realize that yet. Realization is by gradation. Next, planets and also destination. He's worshiping a deity, he's going to go there. It's not as though he worships Chandra and he's going to go to Indra or something like that, or he's going to go to Krishna. No, you go to what you're worshiping. Men of small intelligence worship thee, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship thee, demigods, go to the planets of the demigod. But my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. It makes sense. You worship Krishna, you're going to go to Krishna. You worship Chandra, you're going to go to Chandra. What you meditate on is what you get. So it's very important that you have the proper understanding of what do I meditate on? How do I meditate? At death, that's handed over to you. The body is handed. You say, oh, no, I don't want that. I don't want that body. I don't want blue eyes. I wanted green eyes. Why did you? I wanted curly hair, not straight. I'm sorry, that's your package. So you want the package that's giving you a transcendental form, not another material cage. This birth and death. It's at your choice. Either eternal body that you have waiting for you, or birth and death. Birth and death and birth and death. Okay. Oh, there it is. There's the impersonal form. Everybody like it? It's boring. I said last night, it looks like, oh, she forgot to put a picture here. You just, that's the void, you know. It's like winter when the fog sets in, right? And if you've been in Vrindavan, the taxi drivers don't like to drive until the fog lifts. It's like you can't see past your own hand, right? That's what it's like up there. It's no fun. All right, unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly, think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before, and have now assumed this personality. Yeah, he put on a costume, just the way we did. No, he's not wearing a costume. We're wearing costumes. He's not. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature. They have small knowledge, which is imperishable and supreme. Right? He stated it throughout the Gita, that the personal is superior to the impersonal aspect. Impersonal is part of Krishna, but it is subordinate. Next. Foolish. There's Duryodhana. Proud. Next to Krishna. There's Arjuna. Humble. I want you, Krishna. Or Duryodhana. I want your army. Right? He doesn't realize Krishna's God. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency. And therefore, they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Yeah, they don't know. Our last section. Okay, here we go. Then our signals, right? We're going to know, and then duality, eradicated. People whose sins are all eradicated, they're actually Brahman. And then at death, what happens? You can remember Krishna at death. That leads us into chapter 8. So let's do our slokas together. O Arjuna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me no one knows. Did you see how many times the word know comes up? Knowledge of Krishna. Knowledge of Krishna brings liberation. Not knowing Krishna brings bondage. Simple as that. Dualities, there we go. Friends and enemies, man and woman, It's always a big fight. If you're doing that, it means you're under the modes. If you're identifying that way, oh, he's a man, I'm a woman, this is my friend, that's my enemy, it means you're under the influence of the modes. You're not freed from them. And you're definitely not on the liberated platform. You're jiva bhadana. Jiva bhuta, not a brahma bhuta. O Sion of Bharat, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion. Did you see that? All. Brahma, the butterfly, everybody. Bewildered by dualities, arisen from desire and hate. Do you remember the words? Icha, dvesha. Say it. Icha, dvesha. Icha means desire. I desire to be one with Krishna. Dvesha, I envy him. Not very nice. Next. Eradicated. We're going to burn them all up now. Persons who have acted piously in previous and in this life. They've been pious in the last life, they're pious in this life, and their sinful reactions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Very good. Next. Brahman. Now, who is actually Brahman? Prabhupada makes this very clear, and Krishna does too. It's not just the person who thinks, aham brahmasmi. No, no, it's the person actually worshipping Krishna because he knows the goal. The goal is to go to Krishna Loka. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely... There's the word again. Everything about transcendental activities. So actually, these early, it's an early picture of the devotees in Boston. They're Brahman. They're Brahman. Next. Our last one. Death. This leads us into the chapter 8. This is just like we talked about this yesterday, 529, right? Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. And that takes us into chapter 8, into which Arjuna now gets, he's been waiting all this, he hasn't said a word, but he starts off with 8 questions. He's been saving his questions. All right, now we're going to do a quick run through again, but this time we've got the slides mixed up. You'll see the slide. We're not going to go over the sloka slide, but we'll show you some special slides, and these are the slides I use to send out on a daily basis. So if you do like to receive something in your mailbox every day and it doesn't clog it up, these are the kinds of slides we use. So the first one will go next to what's in between. The hard knot of material affection. Now, what I do is I go through the purport and I look for what would be a good caption for an article or a newspaper or a picture, where you see Prabhupada's literary genius here, and the hard knot. Now this is coming from he summarizes this sloka from the Bhagavatam, how just by hearing of Krishna, either through his Bhagavad Gita or from Vedic literatures, the hard knot of material affection is cut. Simple. Simple. Okay? We'll just talk about the point about these slides. It's not meant for you to try to read. This is meant for people who have time in the morning. They get the mail. They want to read that. And then the whole purport is given as well if they want to read further. Next slide. This is from the first sloka. How do I know Krishna in full? He is Bhagavan. Prabhupada makes many lectures on that. He has 6 opulences. Okay? And that is in, he has opulences in what? Wealth and strength and fame and right, and knowledge, right, and renunciation. And that's in the Bhagavatam. You'll find this. Those are listed. All right, next. And of all the processes, hearing is the prime. Of the 9 processes of devotional service, so I've listed that, and that's also in the Bhagavatam in the 7th canto, 5th chapter. And this is being explained by Prahlad. So the topmost you see here is what? Shravanam, hearing, and that is foremost. Foremost. Okay, next one?
Kirtanam.
Okay, and this is here, you see Prahlad. And this person is only by hearing, and it is qualified only by hearing Hare Krishna, nice to see you. Only by hearing, but qualified in the parampara from the right source. And that means submissively, not challenging. So that is how you really will understand Krishna in full. Okay, next. Next, that's after verse number 2. Here are the two kinds of creation, spiritual and material. And he's explaining in this one how complete knowledge means to know both the phenomenal, the noumenal, and the source. That's knowledge. Not what you, material knowledge, no, no. To know what is the material world, what is spirit, and what is the source behind both. Okay, next. Thousands, let's take a look at this. Some of you have been to Rath Yatra. Next slide. Have you ever been to Rath Yatra? It looks like that, huh? Are there thousands of people there? And they're all trying for perfection. But to actually know Krishna and truth is not cheap. It's not cheap. So that's the point here of many, many thousands. One may be sufficiently interested to take it seriously, philosophically seriously, not just, you know, sentiment and devotion and Jai Jagannath. It takes a lot to, Krishna's not cheap. Okay, next. Bhakti practice factually. People criticize bhakti. Oh, it's the easy path. That's for the sentimentalists. But Prabhupada said, no, no, no. If bhakti is practiced factually, they fall away. So here he's taking so seriously. His guru practiced it factually. Prabhupada practiced it factually. They both shed blood for us. It's not cheap. Okay, next. And we have some quotes in that section too. Again, this is just what you're going to find after this sloka. I've just gone through the purports. Rupa Goswami, devotional service. Again, Prabhupada says, if people are not following the shastras, they create havoc. The whole world is in a mess because people are not following shastras. So he said, anybody who even ignores the shastras, they create a disturbance. It's just a disturbance, unnecessary disturbance to society. That's a quote by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And there's another quote by him in that same purport. I think there were two quotes by him there. Again, the only way to understand Krishna is not through the blunt senses, but he's revealed. Krishna is a process of revelation from within according to your level of transcendental loving service. It's nothing you can demand. It's nothing you can only pray for and say, Krishna, I'm trying to please you. I hope you'll accept my offering. Okay, now this section on the eight. This is important. The false ego. This is the materialistic conception based on the false ego. The concept, I am, and it is mine. This is the fundamental problem. The false ego, I am, and this is mine, this material energy. From the false ego and from these eight separate energies, the Lord manifests the 24 elements. Okay? Superior, there are those. Yeah, this is amazing. Do you have the other picture after that one? I found the cartoon first, and I thought it was a cartoon. But then I found the reality. I found the cartoon, and there's pollution exploiting the outside. You see the factories? And they're blocking it with paintings, so they don't see it. So the West is very good at that. They hide reality. In India, it's not so hidden. It's actually quite apparent here. But they hide it. That way we don't think about global warming, pollution, oil spills, clear cutting. You know, we don't think about that, you know, global. We don't think about those things. They'll go away. So here they're hiding it. But the next slide, go back. Actually, there it is. That's Hong Kong in the background. Can you see it? It's in the fog. It is so polluted that it's 40% beyond what the World Health Organization says is safe. And so the tourists can go home with a picture that they went to Hong Kong. What did they do? They put up a mural. Do you all see it? And that way they can take a picture. There I am, I visited Hong Kong. Is that amazing? It actually, like, I saw the cartoon and I thought it was a joke. But it's not a joke. This is the reality, isn't it? Okay, so if you've ever gone to Hong Kong, I saw other pictures in there. All the people are wearing masks. Yeah, it's too polluted to breathe the air. All right, next. Next slide, yeah, and this one, the source, yeah. the materialist, he may think, I've created a city, I've created a building, but can you be the cause of a planet, of a universe? No. No, no, no. No, you're not on that level. Next slide. Pearls. The purports here are to establish again the importance of the personal over the impersonal aspect. There were many, many points here. I think I didn't have time for so many of the points, but here, these are from Upanishads and how he's actually situated as a silent tree sustaining everything. So beautiful. So beautiful. Next. And there's the sloka again. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Next. Taste of water and fragrance. I could so many find examples for all in the seed of everything. Strength of the strong. Independent. I don't have a slide for that. Here's one. Uh-oh, what happened? Connected? Yeah, how the Lord being above it. He's the everything's emanating from him, but he's nirguna. He's unaffected. And in the material world, that is in a perverted way reflected by the king. The king establishes the law, but he's considered above it. Although most of the kings in those days even did things that were reprehensible. But by law, the king is the monarch, is according to the Gita of men, is the monarch. He is the representative of God. But spiritually, we're understanding now Krishna creates the material energy and its strict laws, but he's not affected by them. Okay? Next. Deluded, anything after that one? Divine, no? Next. Ah, I love this one. If you ever read literature in school, there's a story of Gulliver. And Gulliver wakes up one day and he went to the land of the Lilliputians. And he wakes up and he finds himself tied up by ropes on the ground. And all the people are very small, the Lilliputians. So here, this is an example of us. We wake up when we come to Krishna consciousness and we understand, uh-oh, I'm not this body. I'm bound up by the modes of nature. I have to extricate myself. So there's Gulliver figuring that one out too. Suddenly he can't move. So we're in the same position as Gulliver. Only by bhakti, by a person who's unbound, someone liberated. And that's Prabhupada's, that right in the purport, Krishna says, either by Krishna or his pure devotee can the bounds of karma be cut. You can be released from bondage. Only then. Next. And he's the magician behind everything. This false world, he's explained in the Upanishads. Very poetic. It's a temporary, the background, but the magician behind that temporary illusory background is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next. Miscreants. We have so many pictures. Here we go. We'll look at this quickly. The mudha. He's the foolish worker. He's just too busy working to think about life. Naradama. He's advanced socially, politically, but he doesn't have God in the picture. He's considered Nara, lowest of man. Advanced civilization, but lowest of man. Next is the deluded speculators, the poets, the philosophers. They think they're very great, but their knowledge is stolen by illusion. The professed atheist, his whole purpose in life is to go against God, to defy God, to claim there is no God. And Prabhupada includes into that group the Mayavadis who claim to be God, that they're also considered atheists. And here's more information. Again, it's personal, individual slides on each one. More descriptions about what's a mudha, right? And here's an amazing picture. I found a picture of this poor little donkey, burdened, carrying grass. And then Prabhupada writes how the man who is carrying the burden of self-created duties. Everybody in the world has created his own duties. They're not appointed by God. He made them up. And he's carrying the burden of all these. And so this fellow's, I thought it was identical. He's got all these baskets on his head and like that. So he's the foolish worker, and there's the poor little beast. He doesn't know who he's working for. He's just trying to get a blade of grass. He's carrying it on his back, and that's all he's working for. Okay, next one. And these poor people, talk about exploitation. Like this was in America, the Southerners, the rich plantation owners used to bring the slaves in and do all the work. And so all these poor people, they're working hard for the benefit of illusory masters. But who's the master? Krishna. They don't know the real master. They're working hard for some illusory masters. Next. And they don't have time to listen to knowledge of the spiritual world, but they're so busy. You see people everywhere reading newspapers. Everywhere. What's happening today? The flickering mundane world, the tidings of the flickering mundane world. And the next day, the newspaper's in the trash bin. Next. Okay, the Naradamas, the lowest of mankind, they can only, Prabhupada lists the two brothers, Jagai and Madhava, as being examples of that. Next slide. And also here, this one's the Maya Prakritagyana, the philosophers, the poets, they're discussing high philosophy, but their knowledge is rendered void. They don't really understand. And they don't realize, just like the shadow is being moved by the hand, the movement of the hand creates the shadow, that this world that they see is actually a shadow of the reality. And behind that is the Supreme. Okay? Next. This is a beautiful picture of Krishna, and this is, they don't even realize that the human form, because they say God assumes a human form, but actually the human form is designed, it's a blessed form of the Lord. And that is the form designed to go back to Him. That's why it's so precious, more than an animal or demigod form. So we have the best opportunity in the human form of life. Next. Bhagavad Gita, oh, this is so sweet. I made this one when I heard to a lecture. People see according to their own mentality. A thief sees everybody as a thief. A saint sees everybody as a saint. So Prabhupada said, either you see Bhagavad Gita as it is, but the foolish see Bhagavad Gita as they are. So all these commentators, they comment on the Bhagavad Gita according to their own mentality. Oh, Krishna didn't mean that. He meant this. You're going to tell God what he said, what he meant? It's pretty presumptuous, really. Next. And here we the outright atheist. There is no God, or if there is one, he has to assume a form when he comes here, or I'm God. I mean, there's so many varieties of the professed atheist. That's Darwin, if you didn't figure it out. Next. And then we have some beautiful quotes by Yamunacharya. Despite all the evidence, all of your qualities, all of the scriptures, people still they decry those who have atheistic principles. They decry you. It's sad, really. Okay, the pious, and then we have here the examples from the Shastra. Gajendra came out of distress. Dhruva wanted what?
Wealth.
He wanted a kingdom position. The sages at Namasharanya, they were curious, right? And the Kumaras, the Gyanis, they were searching for knowledge. Four types. Okay. Next. Magnanimous. Next, some more slides. And the great soul. There's a very intimate relationship between me and the pure devotee. And I think Prabhupada, really, no one can really contest that one. That's the great soul. Next one. Rare. Next. Demigods, deity. Do we have any more slides? Yeah, this one. They're dependent upon the Supreme. The benedictions, whatever they get, it has to be sanctioned by Krishna. It cannot be independently done. Everything is dependent upon the will of the Lord. Next. Benefits. Planets. We're almost at the end. And then he describes the four kinds of social categories. The Brahmin is the priest in goodness, and the Kshatriya is the leader or king in what mode? Passion. And the Vaishya, and it can also be merchant. I didn't have room for everything. It's a mixture of two things, passion and ignorance. And the worker, the Sudra, that's the mode of ignorance. Okay? Yeah. And this is cute because it said, can anybody supply food except through the mouth? No. But one person can. Who's that? Krishna. He can take food through his eyes, through his ears, through his hands. So I put that in as irony because it says, can anyone supply food to the body through the ears or eyes? Yes.
Only one person. That's Krishna. Next. Oh, there we go. Impersonal worship. And Bhagavad Gita. How the impersonalists misuse it. And Yamunacharya again. Those people, they are unable to understand you, however expert they may be in discussing Vedanta and Upanishads. Okay? Oh, I love this drawing. I found this drawing. I couldn't believe it. Here's a little man. He's sleeping, and he's got a curtain for a blanket. And the curtain is the sky and the stars. And this is how the Lord is covered by the curtain of the material energy. I mean, how the living entity, he's covered. He's covered by the curtain of material energy. And because of that, he said there appears to be no God. That's actually what they think. And Krishna does that on purpose. Oh, yeah, there's stars up there and like that, but I don't think there's a God. So that's that little drawing, I thought, was just amazingly appropriate for that verse. Next. Say it again.
This person is wearing a curtain of...
He's sleeping, right?
Uh-huh.
So, Jeev Jago. Jeev, wake up.
Okay.
You're asleep. You're covered by the curtain of Maya. You get it? I know, when I found the picture, I thought, my goodness. And I came across the sloka, and I put the two together. I thought, this is amazing. Somebody said, did you draw that? I said, no, it just was ready-made. It's amazing when I'm searching, Krishna will put some amazing pictures for me to find. You know, every day I go online and I research unusual drawings and things, and it's surprising. Just like that one about the man putting the paintings in front of the smog. Okay, next. Foolish. And some more. Yeah, the fool. I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. I'm covered by my curtain, internal potency. They do not know that I am unborn and infallible. And that's a few more. No, everybody know me. 26. Yeah, the sun is there. The stars are there. The clouds do not cover them. The clouds, only because of our apparent vision, appear to cover them. You cannot cover the sun. You cannot cover the stars or the moon. But the cloud of Maya, because of our apparent, they apparently are covered. That is the purport here. Next. Duality. Hate, desire, and hate. That one again. Deluded by duality. People who are always saying, I like this, I don't like that, he's my friend, he's my enemy. That person is... he's afflicted with this. He's suffering from it, duality, heat and cold and pleasure and pain and happiness and distress and gain and loss and man and woman. Anybody who's caught up in those things, he is deluded by the modes of material nature. Next. Isha, Dvesha, and that's the end of our show. That's the theater masks. Desire, he's happy, and hatred at the end. You see the theater masks, the happiness and distress. Isha, Dvesha. Okay, and that's it. All right, so now I think we have a little time. We're running almost close to our time. Do we have a quick time for the part of the video? Now, yesterday we showed part one, but we're going to look now at the last few minutes to the theistic side of life. Yesterday we saw the trajectory for the atheistic view of life. So they argued in the movie, well, okay, you can't prove this, or you can't prove that, or you can't disprove this, or you can't disprove that. But let's see what the outcome is. What is the outcome of an atheistic model of the universe? What is the outcome of a theistic conception of the universe? So we'll watch that, okay? And we'll finish that, all right? Alrighty, so you got the video, and it's just a few minutes, 7 minutes. We might run a little bit over time, but you've been patient. And tonight I think we have enough prasadam for everybody.
If we consider a scenario of the intelligent creation,
is it audible for everybody?
The abstract point of singularity, the cause of all creation is the superintelligent personality who implements step by step his reasonable plan. In this case, matter develops progressively according to a predetermined plan without any element of chance. And the word cosmos, that in Greek means order, now finds its original meaning. place a tidiness and order in someone's home, it is obvious that the owners have arranged it for the sake of convenience and beauty.
Could you turn it up a little bit?
Is the cause of all the creations, then order is the origin of the creator himself? On the one hand, this is a perfectly reasonable question. On the other hand, it can go on non-stop. Because any reason is a consequence of another preceding legal reason. Therefore, from the cause and effect point of view, this question remains unanswered forever. And it is the basis of Gnosticism, which is the concept that the world is fundamentally unknown or unknowable. The search for the original cause of all is quite reasonable. But since this research is undertaken in the parameters of ever-changing matter and our mind, limited by the cliches and stereotypes, we quickly come to a dead end. To solve this problem, one needs to approach a higher authority. The most ancient authoritative writings on the earth, the Vedas, solve this mystery with ease. According to the Vedantra Sutra, the absolute truth, or God, is the original source of all, the cause of all causes, which itself has no reasons. Thus, in the case of intelligent creation, the element of chance is completely eliminated, and it means that everything is developing according to the planned scenario. The Vedic Treatise, Bhagavata Purana, describes the process of creation in minute details. The Vedas say that at the dawn of creation there was a spiritual sound, Om, which contains all the information about the universe in archived form. The transcendental sound can be compared to a tiny seed from which a huge tree of the universe sprouts. The element of space emanates from sound and becomes a repository for the grosser elements of the cosmos. Space becomes a medium for the dissemination of sounds, which gives us the ability to hear. Next, the air element appears from space, and its movement gives us a tactile sensitivity. The polarization of air masses in space results in an electrical discharge that generates the element of fire, or heat. Fire in the form of light enables us to see objects. When fire heats air, it gives rise to the condensation. Thus, the element of water, or the liquid state of matter, takes place. Due to the water element, we are able to taste. When water dries up, the precipitate remains. That is the element of earth, or the solid state of matter. Earth, in the form of tiny particles, is spread by air, which allows us to perceive odors. In this way, all five fundamental elements of creation emanate one from the other and becomes the object of perception to our five senses. The creation of the universe goes from the subtle to the gross. Just as we first create a plan or a project and then begin to implement it physically. The purpose of this material creation is to facilitate the souls which decided to leave the highest spiritual reality in the association of God and wanted to try themselves in His role in an alternative reality, a virtual playground. God has two main functions. He controls everything and He enjoys everything. And the living beings as His parts and parcels also try to rule it over and enjoy this world. Therefore, we have two objectives in this world to achieve. One is to try ourselves in the role of God, and when this objective inevitably fails because we are not God, then we move on to another objective, a spiritual development, which is the divine plan that we are offered to take up as the main task of our lives. The moral consequence of the intelligent creation idea is that people aim at their highest values of life that make them simple and sublime. Such spiritually motivated people are trying to follow high principles of morality that they perceive as the divine will, and not just as rules of etiquette for the sake of public order. The spiritual value system encourages people to strive for perfection in all respects. Such people do not want to exploit the resources of material nature, but instead focus on building a harmonious relationship with the environment. They see not only national and cultural differences, but also a spiritual unity, which is the basis of respect for each other. By observing the world, one can see that the laws of harmony create common universal values that unite all people. Harmony of colors and shapes creates fine art paintings and architectural masterpieces. Harmony of sounds creates music. Harmony of elements of nature creates ideal conditions for all living beings. For a thoughtful man, it is quite obvious that these world-uniting laws of harmony originate from a single, intelligent, and harmonious source. The concept of intelligent creation gives life a sublime sense and makes people more peaceful and harmonious. Of course, there are skeptics who'd say that religion is not a panacea for all the problems. And they are right, because history knows many examples of religious conflicts and wars. That is why we must distinguish between the external religiosity, which is oftentimes nationalism, race and geography, and true within spirituality. And the ability to distinguish comes from the spiritual knowledge, and not just faith. That is why we again and again keep referring to the Vedas as non-confessional, non-sectarian, universal knowledge for everyone.
Okay, so that was it. So that is the projectile for the theistic model of intelligent creation, and that is what Krishna is telling us in this chapter, that he is the source of everything. You saw how the elements come from one another. And the important thing is that spiritual life allows a person, even in the, if he's still in the material tabernacle, to have a peaceful, harmonious existence while he aspires for transcendence. So we've run over time by 7 minutes. I'm sorry we've gone over time like that. Again, if you wish to receive an access to these slides, please just send me your email. Use this email if you have access to email, and you'll be put on the Google list. Please accept some prasadam as you go. And thank you so much for coming to this part two. Vanchi Kalpaturi Vyascha, Kipasindu Vyavacha, Patitanam Havani Bo, Vaishnavyanamonam. And I hope you have a very nice stay here. This is the month of the book distribution. Hare Krishna.